Our next guest tonight is a former police officer with the city of Huntington Beach in Southern California. He's now retired, and I'd like to welcome Adam Berkey to Outbeat Now.
Thank you, Greg, very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Adam, you've written a book called Friendly Fire, The Illusion of Justice, and this book just came out, and it tells about your story in law enforcement, and it's not quite as positive as our last guest, but equally important, if not more important, to tell. Why don't you start out by telling us a little about what got you interested in law enforcement and how you began your career?
Well, two of my uncles were cops when I grew up, and they were always a really big inspiration to me when I would see them at their house at, you know, family gatherings and be able to wear their badge or wear their gun belt. It was just so inspiring. And when I was 15 in high school, I found out about a program, an Explorer program, that was in the city of Huntington Beach. It was called Search and Rescue. And I joined that to be a police explorer and, you know, begin exploring or determining if this is really a career that I wanted to do. And it was literally the first ride-along of racing through the town and catching bad people and just having a good time that it kind of sealed my fate.
Did you ever fear that being gay would get in the way of having a successful career in law enforcement?
Absolutely, but for me, as I'm sure for many other people, I mean, I knew I was gay when I was younger, but had never really defined myself as gay. And, you know, when I was growing up, there were here and there comments that, you know, close friends or family members would make. And then when I became an explorer and became a cadet after that and went through the academy, it really started to sink home about who I was, you know, becoming as a gay man. And the comments and things that I would hear from other people, even if they were subtle or not, really had a way of putting in the closet and hiding the key just far enough away so I wouldn't know or wouldn't find it for years later. So it really had a sort of a stigma on me that it was just, I knew that if this is the job that I wanted to do, at least in Huntington Beach and the culture that was there, that coming out was going to be something that if I ever did it, it was going to be way down the road.
So you mentioned that the key was just out of reach, but what other steps did you take to keep your personal life so well hidden from your peers as a explorer and then as an officer?
Well, I didn't really start exploring my sexuality until I was in the neighborhood of 21 or 22, because I had been hired at 20, graduated from the academy at 21, and then that whole first year of being on the job was probation and the field training program. So I was busy around the clock. But once I got my own patrol beat and had my own squad, I, you know, started getting online and meeting different people. And that took me up to L.A., where I turned into just a crazy party animal for a time being. And but I was afraid, and afraid every time that I went there that I would, you know, see somebody I knew, and you know how rumors fly. And so I kind of led a very, very sheltered life, at least away from the department, because I just didn't want anybody to know. And at the time, although I didn't write about it in my book, there was also an explorer that I had been in search and rescue with that was also gay. And so it was kind of like, you know, doing this tap dance around him, because he was a lot more out than I was, and I was afraid that if I ended up there that he would tell other people and it would just go downhill from there. And he actually never got hired, so it was kind of like I had my job and he was just, you know, kind of figuring out what he wanted to do. So it was a big threat to me from my perspective. In L.A., I found like I could be myself there. And when I was in Orange County where I live, it was just like, you know, be on guard, because, you know, if you're seen walking around with another guy in the mall or going to the grocery store or something like that, people always have questions. And, you know, cops talk, and the rumor mill goes round and round. And, you know, that was just one of the things that when people did see me with other people, that began to perpetuate the rumor mill and start some of the things that happened at work.
Yeah.
Well, I can certainly identify with that. I mean, even when I came out after 25 years on the job, the first time going to the Castro, I mean, you know, my heart was pounding, and I was deathly afraid I was going to be seen there. And you know, I look back on it now, and it seems so silly, because if somebody saw me there and they were in the Castro, then,
Yeah.
ridiculous.
I think we've all had an experience like that, though. Yeah. It's, yep. You know, every gay person goes through that as part of their coming out process.
Yeah.
It is, and it's. I mean, I look back at how irrational and just how much time I spent, you know, toiling over this, and how much energy and sadness and sorrow I had, and how afraid I was of, you know, looking myself in the mirror. And it's like, you know, if I had looked back 10 years ago to who I am today, and now I've written this book, and, you know, I have a webpage, and the whole world can see, you know, that I'm gay, and I've pretty much come out to everyone. And it's just like, I could have never imagined doing something like that. But the peace and freedom that has come from it is unbelievable. And I really wish that, you know, I guess I wouldn't be where I am today if I hadn't gone through what I had, but I wish that I could have had this perspective back then.
Sure.
Because I know a lot of things, not only in my life, but in incidents that happened with the police department and decisions I would have made or would be totally different.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about your book a little bit. Now, you describe in the early stages of your career being very successful and getting a lot of positive feedback. What did your supervisor say about your police work before the rumors began?
Well, it was my Explorer cadet and first 3 or 4 years into law enforcement were all amazing. They were like building blocks. And so what the cadet and Explorer program did was allow the department to see, give you a chance to prove yourself and for them to mold you in the type of officer that they want to have working at that agency. And so it was kind of like, you know, coming in the back door to get there. And so I had stellar evaluations. And each test that I took, I did extremely well on. I was regularly called upon to help on, you know, extracurricular duties. I got some of the greatest assignments when I was a cadet working on the downtown football team and in detectives and the SWAT team. And it was just amazing. And the same goes for my first couple of years as a police officer, where I felt like the training officers that I got were not the ones that I would see other people getting when they were trying to throw that person out of training because they weren't cutting
mm-hmm.
it. Mine was, it was like a joyride. And I just had a great group of guys that I knew and identified with. And, you know, they were real easygoing with me and, you know, where I could hear stories of other new guys getting on the job and, you know, their TO is screaming at them and giving them, you know, horrible evaluations every day and all of that. And I just, a lot of people kind of refer to me as like the shining star, the guy that's going to be the next chief of police and that, you know, I would rise through the ranks really quickly. But of course that all, you know, drastically changed.
So perhaps you could tell us then about some of the incidents of harassment you experienced at work.
Probably the most horrific incident for me, and it was one of the initial incidents that happened, was when I was assigned to a week-long arrest and control class. And one of the, he was a friend of mine at the time, as we had both gone through Explorers and Cadets together. He had also become an officer. And while we were in this class together, I don't know why, but from that point forward, it was like, you know, I question actually if, you know, he's in the closet himself. But it was like, you know, point the finger at him and say he's gay. And so the incident started, and we were doing warm-up exercises, and the instructor was also like that friend of mine that, you know, any opportunity that he got to, you know, point the finger or direct some sort of gay comment or a derogatory remark to someone else other than him, he took advantage of it. So they called me a cross-dresser while we were, you know, rolling around on the mats and trying to get out of compromising positions. My partner kind of straddled from behind me and began thrusting his pelvis into my butt as if he was simulating anal sex and, you know, screaming and moaning, and the whole class just erupted in laughter. And the instructor said that was a natural position for me, bent over to take it like that. And I was just humiliated. And it was like I couldn't do anything other than push him off. And then in the next exercise, he would be right back doing it again. And it was horrific. But there were a lot of things that happened in briefings where there would be, you know, 4 or 5 sergeants and a watch commander sitting up at front and of the briefing room, and maybe 20 or more cops in there. And someone would chime in and say, I heard about this call where there was this guy masturbating to little boys playing tennis, and that must have been Adam on his days off. Or there was a time when someone called had come in that they were reading off the briefing board where a gay couple, there was a disturbing the peace call at their house. And they had asked if that was my house. People, too, would come up to me and make comments. One officer asked if my HIV had kicked in. It was all the time that stuff was going on. So it was a lot to deal with.
And I remember reading something in the book about an incident in your locker. That was one of the things that really struck me. It was a real invasion of your private space. Can you tell us about that?
Thank you for reminding me about that, Greg. Yes, that was an incident that happened several years into my career. And I had worked overtime in patrol one day and came back to my locker. It was like 11:30 at night. I worked day shift. Went to my locker, opened it up, and slipped on my pants and took off my uniform. And I put my keys from my locker into my jeans that I had worn to work, and there was something in my pocket. And so I reached inside and pulled it out, not wondering how it had gotten there. And it was a sex escort ad from the back pages of an alternative newspaper that's down here called OC Weekly. And I just, it was like my heart sank. And at the same time was beating a million miles a second. And as I wrote in the book, it was like I just wanted to break down and cry at one point, and at the same time was furious that somebody had been in my locker, that these guys, that this wasn't just going to be something that it was kind of, hey, let's call Adam gay for a couple of days or even a couple of months, and then we'll get over ourselves and move on to the next target. So it wasn't like that. This was like the coup de grace where now they were invading my personal space. They were sending a message to me that I think that they really wanted me to know that they knew. And it was just, it was devastating. And I was very afraid at that point too, because where was this going to go? If their comments had already been heard by supervisors and nothing was done and people didn't seem to lay off, what was going to happen if I were to come out? Or would it get even worse than it was going on right now? And I don't remember why I did it, but I had a friend who was a cop who did know about me. And he was working overtime in dispatch. And for whatever reason, I went in and showed him the article, and he was just blown away as well. And he was like a 25-year cop. And so I made a complaint with the chief, and he immediately started another internal affairs investigation.
During that investigation, how was the complaint received? And did you have any confidence at any point that things were going to get better?
Given the fact of how I knew the culture of that organization worked, I could say that I think the stance that I initially took was, let's talk about it, let's fix it, let's make it better, and let's go from there, because I definitely had not filed any sort of lawsuit at the time. But I also knew that these guys, just by the culture there, is that these guys are just, they're very hard-headed. If somebody comes and tells them you're wrong or this isn't the right way to deal with this, they look at that as adversarial. And so I begin to feel and see that I was the adversary on the other side. And so it was like it was their mission to make my life miserable for, in essence, smearing mud on their faces, and to try and, from my perception, cover up whatever they could cover up to make this go away.
Right.
And what initially happened was that I went into the detective bureau to get away from patrol, because patrol was where a majority of these incidents were happening. And other things started happening when I went there. Everybody gets a car when you're a detective, because you have to go out and do follow-up on cases or meet people to serve a warrant somewhere, and they wouldn't give me a car. And so I met with the chief about that, and he had an excuse, and it turned into another bunch of drama. finally they gave me a car, and it was the biggest piece of junk that they could find. It was disgusting, with throw up inside and no radio, and it was just a joke.
Wow.
And then later on, I had become the Explorer advisor, and some other incidents of harassment happened out there after I made my complaint. And then I was removed from the Explorer program. And at that point, that was like another, about another $1,000 a month that I was making in overtime to run that program because of the time commitment that it required. So it was, they docked me about $1,000 a month with that. And that was the final straw that, you know, it was like, this is not going to get any better. And, you know, I'm going to have to, it's, you know, my career, I was watching it circle the drain, and it just seemed to keep going in a downward spiral. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point where I just felt, you know what, I'm going to have to stand up for myself on another level. And that's when I hired the attorneys and filed the lawsuit against them.
So you ended up filing a suit, and I understand it settled before it even went to court.
Yes. The first attempt that we made to kind of sit down and discuss this is when it settled.
Wow. And so now you're retired from the police department, and you've written a book called Friendly Fire, The Illusion of Justice. Tell us a little bit about then what your plans are for the book and your hopes are for the future.
My real intent and plans for the book are to share the story of not only what happened to me, but how I ended up looking at this experience, which, you know, at one point was a big nightmare to me and now has become such a blessing in my life. Mm. And I know that may be hard for a lot of people to understand, but I really look at the experience as, you know, here are a bunch of people who are showing me how much they don't like me or hate me for being gay. And really what I found was that I hated myself in the same way, you know, living this lie that I was telling to people and living this double life and not accepting myself to be able to go and, you know, go to LA and feel comfortable or to, you know, have a partner and walk down the street and hold his hand. And it's just, it was like I was in this prison. And this whole incident, everything that happened, really shaped my perspective about life. And I was able to, you know, basically shed the tons of bricks that I was carrying around on my shoulders living this double life and, you know, now have the freedom to be who I want to be. And so the big message of my story is to, you know, really give my experience to other people and give them tools that help me through my situation as I went through it. So maybe something that I went through or something that I learned from my experience will be able to help them and on their journey in life.
We've been talking with Adam Berkey, formerly of the Huntington Beach Police Department. His website is www.friendlyfirethebook.com, and the name of his book is Friendly Fire, The Illusion of Justice. Thanks, Adam, for being with us on Outbeat Now.
It's my pleasure. Thank you guys very, very much for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.